So this paper is about Wittgenstein and cultural relativism. And I don't know how many of you have already a view about this subject. I take it that the standard view would be that Wittgenstein was a cultural relativist, especially in his work Philosophical Investigations, and even more in Uncertainty. And I'm happy to take from you counter-arguments against my position, which is that he is not. Not only that he was not supporting cultural relativism, but that he was even opposing it. So that's the view I want to defend in this paper. My paper has two parts. In the first part, I want to do some close reading of Philosophical Investigations, section 206. And you find that one on the handout, as most of the remarks I'm going to refer to. Not everyone maybe has a handout, but most of the texts which I'm going to refer to, I'm actually going to cite. So at least you can follow them in that way. So first I want to do some close reading of Philosophical Investigations in the following PI 206. And I will relate my reading to issues of cultural relativism and try to show that the PI's philosophy does not lend support to cultural relativism. So, I derive from the Philosophical Investigations, and in particular from PI 206, an argument against cultural relativism. It is in short the following. Humans communicate with each other, be they from the same or from different cultures, on the basis of shared ways of acting, in Wittgenstein's own words, Handlungsweise. Where no such shared ways of acting exist, they can be developed. For such development to be possible, no more shared rationality or conceptuality is presupposed than is when children learn their mother tongue. Now, is this something which is new, which is so terribly different from what we anyway believe? Well, there are attempts to base, the possibility of communicating with each other not so much in shared ways of acting, but in shared rationality or shared concepts. And with Wittgenstein, I think the argument does not go that we have shared concepts, but that we have shared ways of acting, Handlungsweisen, to begin with. And from there we can maybe have a shared conceptuality, or at least develop it. This way of interpreting the Philosophical Investigations is far from novel, I think. I consider it nevertheless important to remind us of some key notions and insights which come with the Philosophical Investigations and which are relevant to the discussion of cultural relativism. These key notions and insights are often not sufficiently acknowledged in discussions of cultural relativism. And indeed, Wittgenstein himself is often presented as a cultural relativist par excellence himself. In contrast to positions which attribute to Wittgenstein cultural relativism, I shall claim that he questions and opposes cultural relativism on the basis of there being shared common human nature, a human capacity for actions and behavior that are common to all human cultures and civilizations despite their differences. I mean, some of you who have read a lot of Wittgenstein, or work on Wittgenstein, may think now this is crazy. I mean, this is not the way to read Wittgenstein. First of all, one usually does not attribute to Wittgenstein such strong claims, and one does not attribute to him claims about the nature of human beings, but I really think we can derive from his philosophy such claims. I think that Wittgenstein actually believes there are certain human universals, and one of them is, for example, giving and following orders. That's an example which he comes back to again and again, and which I will use as a touchstone in this paper over and over again. So, there are common ways of acting, like it is the case with giving and following orders, and there are also common ways of behaving, according to Wittgenstein. And it is important that we distinguish the acting from the behaving. And according to my reading of Wittgenstein, it is on the basis of such common human ways of behaving that common ways of acting can be developed where they do not yet exist. It is important that we perform an accurate reading and translation of the philosophical investigations of Wittgenstein's texts in order to avoid misunderstandings of the text and permit an understanding as full as possible. This starts with paying attention to the philosophical investigations' exact phrasing. For example, when in PI 206 Wittgenstein speaks of, and he wrote in German, die gemeinsame menschliche Handlungsweise. So he uses the word Handlungsweise there. He does not say das gemeinsame menschliche Verhalten. Now, I don't know how this usually is rendered in Bulgarian, but in English that phrase, gemeinsame menschliche Handlungsweise, is translated as common behavior of mankind. Even in the new revised translation by Hecker and Schulte, they say common behavior of mankind. I want to show that the concept of action, Handlung, is indeed important to Wittgenstein, and maybe that's another thing which many Wittgenstein scholars would be surprised at. Has Wittgenstein made such a point out of distinguishing Handlung from Benehmen, Verhalten? I think he has. So Wittgenstein has attributed to action an important role in indifference to behavior. So where he speaks of action, Handlung, we should translate and treat it as such. He sometimes uses the expression behavior, which in German would be either Verhalten or Benehmen. So he uses those words sometimes to include Handlung, action. But where he says Handlung, I think he means Handlung. He does not mean mere behavior, understood in the sense of behavioristically accessible phenomenon. So the distinction between action and behavior is important. Ways of acting, Handlungsweisen, are for Wittgenstein mainly tied to language use. While behavior does not need to be, there's a lot of non-linguistic and pre-linguistic behavior, but I would like to claim that for Wittgenstein, Handlung is very intimately linked to language use. And indeed, his Sprachspiele can be seen to be Handlungsspiele, and his Handlungen are mostly connected to Sprachspiele, to be Handlungen involving language. The expression Handlungsweise, way of acting, is used also in other PI passages. For example, in the famous Philosophical Investigations section 201, and that one you find as the first quote on the handout. So in that section he says, in English translation, this was our paradox, no course of action could be determined by a rule, because every course of action can be made out to accord with the rule, and so on. So the German for course of action is here Handlungsweise, and here adequately the Handlung is retained in the English translation by rendering it as course of action. One could discuss whether course of action is really there. Handlungsweise, but anyway, it is important that the Handlung is retained by translating Handlung as action. And only a few sections later, we have then that other passage in 206 where he speaks of the shared ways of acting. So, as in 201, where he speaks of Handlungsweise, in the English translated as course of action, Handlung is important because rule following is about acting. It's a Handlung. So it is important in 206 to retain that Handlung there and to translate Handlungsweise as in some way involving action. And those who read Wittgenstein in English only miss that connection there, because in 206 they just see common human behavior and not ways of acting. These are more or less preliminary remarks to my argument. I want to make another preliminary remark. I've already said that Wittgenstein is in 206 and in those sections there not really discussing cultural relativism. He's discussing rule following. And on the whole, I think even more, if one looks at the place and the places where that section 206 comes from in the Nachlass, then one sees that at no place he was really concerned with cultural relativism in the first place. It was always discussions of other philosophical topics like rule following, private language, the relation between the inner and the outer. The question is consciousness, intentionality, something which we need to see in language in order to recognize it as language and so on. There, that remark comes in. And it comes always in as a sort of mantra at the end. That's his touchstone, that's his insight he wants to hold on to in order to solve those other problems. So the insight that there's a common human way of acting is a basic insight, a rock bottom, I would say, which he does not want to leave, and which is his starting point for dealing with certain philosophical issues. Nevertheless, I think it's not wrong to take that statement, view of his, as a statement and a view in its own right, as a view actually which can be made relevant in discussions of cultural relativism, where one often says there is no such human universal which we could refer to in order to describe and explain how humans of different cultures can communicate with each other. And when I speak of cultural relativism, I would like to distinguish two senses of cultural relativism. I think there's cultural relativism in an unproblematic sense and cultural relativism in a problematic sense. As cultural relativism in an unproblematic sense, I understand the position that descriptive and normative views about the world are relative to the particular cultural frameworks they adhere to, and that these views are constituted, or at least co-constituted, by these frameworks. This is cultural relativism in a weak sense, which I think Wittgenstein would have no problem to agree to. However, from this position, often a stronger one is derived and even attributed to Wittgenstein himself, especially in context of anthropology, and that is cultural relativism in a more radical sense. And it is this sort of cultural relativism I have in mind when saying that Wittgenstein's philosophical investigations does not support it and even opposes it. Cultural relativism in the radical sense holds that since cultural views will always be to some extent relative to specific cultural frameworks, no framework, external, conceptual view or stance will be possible. And from this it would then follow that not only none of our particular cultural frameworks can claim to have privilege or priority over the others, and consequently none of the views adhering to one framework can claim privilege over views adhering to another framework, But it would also follow, and this is the consequence cultural relativism in the radical sense draws, it would also follow that there cannot be any overarching universal conceptual standards which would enable a rational decision as to which of these views is best or correct, or which would then enable one to mediate between the single frameworks and views. Because any standard will necessarily belong to a specific framework. Such claims may be defendable to some extent, but in their strongest form, namely that it will not be possible for members of radically different cultures to find ways to understand each other, I think it's not defendable with Wittgenstein at least, and that's the point I want to make. Very often Wittgenstein is invoked as a proponent of such views, invoking his notion of language game, forms of life, and so on, and we can discuss all this. I think he does not lead support to cultural relativism in the radical sense, at least not with those notions there, and especially not with the notion of the shared ways of acting, as I'm going to try to show to you. So, I will now first try to show that cultural relativism in the radical sense is questioned, partly as something which rests on false premises and opposed in the PI. And in the second part of my paper, I will go outside the PI, outside that text-immanent reading of what I consider to be one of Wittgenstein's works, namely the Philosophical Investigations, the PI, and go to the Nachlass to enlighten some of the key notions which I use in the first part of my paper further. And I think there won't be much more time than to enlighten further what is meant by language. What does Wittgenstein mean by language in the Philosophical Investigations? And I think in order to understand that, we can derive some insights from the Nachlass. And another point is, what role does a certain pre-rational basis and pre-linguistic basis play for intercultural communication, according to Wittgenstein? So, let's first go to the text of Philosophical Investigations, section 206, and that's the second quote on your handout. I think this is a key passage in the argument against cultural relativism, because the situation which Wittgenstein describes there is per se, I think, the situation which cultural relativists would want to invoke as a situation in their favor, namely we have the situation where one comes, for example, as an explorer into an unknown country with a language quite strange to one, and the question is how can we, as the ones who are foreign to that culture, how can we at all make a statement about what these other people are doing, and how can we start to understand them? So what does Wittgenstein say about this situation? Well, he says about this situation in the standard translation, the Erskine translation, but also in the Hecker and Schulte translation, the common behavior of mankind is the system of reference by means of which we interpret an unknown language. Now, I've already made the point that in German it says die gemeinsame menschliche Handlungsweise, so we should translate that the common ways of acting, humanity's, mankind's common ways of acting are the system of reference by means of which we interpret an unknown language. So there are two important terms in this paragraph here, I think. One is the gemeinsame menschliche Handlungsweise and the other one is the Deuten, in the interpreting. What Wittgenstein says, in such a situation, even though we cannot understand what is going on, we can still deuten, interpret what is going on. And we can do that on the basis of our gemeinsame menschliche Handlungsweise. What will be the result of such an interpretation? Well, it will not yet be understanding, but it will give us more than nothing. First I want now to say a few more things about gemeinsame menschliche Handlungsweise, and then I want to say a few things how we can get from the interpreting to the actual understanding. There's a difference between verstehen und deuten, between interpreting and understanding. And here Wittgenstein says, first what we do is just interpreting, it's not understanding yet. To gemeinsame menschliche Handlungsweise. So the focus is on Handlung, action, rather than behavior. Thus, according to section 206 of the PI, it is not behavior or primitive reactions, such as crying out in pain, which constitute our framework of reference for interpreting an unknown language. But it is indeed shared ways of acting, Handlung, action. This is confirmed by the examples which Wittgenstein provides in this section, giving orders, understanding them, obeying them, rebelling against them. These are examples of action rather than behavior. That it is action, Handlung, rather than behavior we are talking about is also confirmed by the examples given in other PI sections relevant for the issue at hand. For example, PI section 205, which is not on your handout, I'm sorry. There he says, commanding, questioning, recounting, chatting are as much a part of our natural history, of our Naturgeschichte, a part of human nature as walking, eating, drinking, playing. These examples, commanding, questioning, recounting, chatting, they are all actions and all involve language. And language in these examples is, as I say, on the level of action, not on the level of behavior. So it's really the point he wants to make is really a point about action playing a crucial role in the interpretation of foreign cultures rather than behavior. And of course, behavior and the pre-rational, as I will come back to later, is crucially important to Wittgenstein too. But here he makes the point, when we meet with a foreign culture, our system of reference for interpreting them is shared ways of acting, not shared ways of behavior. It is human activities and human actions upon which the interpretation of foreign languages and foreign cultures can be and is based. So, on this basis, I think it is fair to derive from PI 206 the following two claims. A. There are activities and actions common to mankind. It is not only common to the members of the foreign culture observed, not only common to them and me, the observer, but common to humans in general. And B, it is these activities and actions upon which the interpretation of foreign cultures and languages can be and actually is based. So in the following, I may occasionally just speak of activities, but I always mean both activities and action in the more narrow sense. PI 206 can be understood in a stronger and in a weaker way. In a stronger way, it says that there are ways of acting common to mankind, and that this makes the interpretation of foreign cultures possible. And in the weaker, it says that the interpretation of foreign cultures is possible to the extent that there are such ways of acting common to mankind. As you understand from what I say, I dare to read it in the strong way, that there are actually activities and actions common to mankind. So I actually attribute to Wittgenstein a claim about human nature And we can call this to be an ontological claim. And for those of you who are busy with Wittgenstein scholarship, this may be a rather provocative claim, because it's usual to say that Wittgenstein has not put forward any thesis, and in any way he has not made any thesis with which would involve some ontological dimensions. He would always separate ontology from what we can say about the grammar of our language. I do think that Wittgenstein has made some claims to ontology, and that this is one of them. At the same time, I would claim that Wittgenstein, and especially his PI, are to be read in a therapeutic way, and that the therapeutic interpretation of Wittgenstein is not necessarily in contrast with that ontological interpretation of Wittgenstein. I don't know to what extent you are interested or into these debates about whether Wittgenstein and his PI are to be read therapeutically, or rather as putting forward theses, doctrines, and so on. This is a big issue in Wittgenstein research. I think one can combine the two, the ontology and the therapeutic reading. How would I go about to defend my ontological reading about Wittgenstein? And of course, I mean, many, and I would suppose including Todor, would say that the Tractatus has, of course, a certain ontology, has makes certain claims about how the world really is. But also the PI, I think, would do that. The claims which are relevant here are claims about human nature. And I have collected on the handout a few remarks there to that extent. PI 415, then 143, and then some text from the second part, or so-called second part of the PI, which is by now no longer called the second part of the PI. Peter Hecke and Joachim Schulte call it a fragment in any way. When we now speak of the philosophical investigations, we mainly just mean philosophical investigations, what traditionally has been called part one. But in these texts, Wittgenstein clearly says that what he is doing is supplying remarks on the natural history, Naturgeschichte, on human nature. And it's basically observations which no one has doubted, but which have escaped remark only because they are always before our eyes. So he says he does invoke some views and claims about what human nature is. It's just that these claims are nothing which would be controversial. Everyone agrees in his eyes about these claims. And in that sense, they can't really be called theses, because they are not controversial. They are trivialities, truisms. So in that sense, he speaks about the general facts of nature, allgemeine Naturtatsachen, and about things which he thinks characterize human nature. So I have made two claims above, namely that there is shared human ways of acting, and then secondly that it is these shared human ways of acting upon which we can interpret radically foreign different cultures. How can these two claims help us to see that cultural relativism in the radical sense is not an option? Now, if we put ourselves in the position of that observer person coming to a foreign culture, we have the situation that that person, I, observe members of the foreign community doing Y and Z. They are doing things while they utter something, I call it X, I don't understand this X, I don't understand what they say, but I interpret it to mean something like what the words we utter when members of my community, when we do Y. So I see them doing Y and Z, they say X, I don't know what X means, and X can be related to either Y and Z. How do I know whether it is related to Y or whether it is related to Z? How do I know what X means? And how can I, on the basis of those two claims above, find an answer to these questions? I won't give a clear answer, I think, throughout the entire paper. This is one of the things which Wittgenstein does not answer very clearly, but I think he thinks that we do manage to answer the question, and he does so with reference to shared ways of acting. First of all, there's one thing which has to be added to the two claims above, namely the issue of regularity. There has to be a relation of regularity between what these foreign people say and what they do. So there has to be a relation of X and Y if X is related to Y. There has to be the relation of regularity. And that is another claim. I think another ontological claim which Wittgenstein makes, and that claim can be understood in two ways. First of all, there's regularity in nature independent of the human domain, and then there's regularity in the human domain. There's regularity in language and in society and so on. So there's quite some, I think, quite some concepts and views in Wittgenstein which can be associated with a certain realism and objectivism rather than idealism and subjectivism. How much time have I used, Tondor? Quite some time already.
Maybe 30 minutes.
So I have 50 minutes left, or 20, or another 30 yes. minutes. Yeah. You just stop me when you say, tell me when I have only 10 minutes left. Yeah, so that we have enough time to discuss. There's an important other section in the PI, and that is that comes after 206, where he speaks about the shared ways of acting. Namely, in 207, he makes that point that regularity, in German, Regelmäßigkeit, is a conditio sine qua non for us to recognize anything as language. There is no language without regularity. So there he constructs a case, again, where we meet a foreign culture, and if we cannot recognize any regularity there, we cannot call this what they are seemingly doing in linguistic ways, we cannot call it a language. It's what Wittgenstein there in 207, and you have that on the handout too, what he says there is we cannot call anything language if we cannot recognize regularity, Regelmäßigkeit in it. And be it a language, we cannot relate to it as language. So in order to being able to recognize in a foreign culture something as language, we have to be able to recognize some regularity there. And that becomes even clearer in text passages from the Nachlass, where he makes several times that point, that we can only recognize something as a language which is regular in the ways which we are familiar with from our own language. Then in 208, the section after 207, he makes a point which I think is extremely important. And that point leads us then over to the issue of the pre-rational, the pre-linguistic. Because one question is, of course, how can one recognize something as involving or being characterized by regularity? And how do I at all learn the concept of regularity? On what basis can children in one culture acquire such a concept, the concept of regularity? And how can members of different cultures learn about regularity? And in section 208, and that's also on your handout, he says that we can learn the concept of regularity simply on the basis of example. So let's maybe go to that text, because I think that's one of the most radical statements and views which Wittgenstein has. He says, I quote from 208, and you find that right at the beginning of the section, "How do I explain the meaning of regular, uniform, same to anyone?" Now, you have, of course, the case where you just need a translation. I speak to a Bulgarian or a French, and we may just find out that you have a word for that. And we use the word to handle the same concept as we use another word for. So, in that case, I can just say, I shall explain these words to someone who, say, only speaks French by means of the corresponding French words. But if there's a person that has not yet got the concept of regularity, is then at all some communication possible? Can I at all bring that person to understand what I mean by regular? And there Wittgenstein says, I shall teach him to use the words by means of examples and by practice. And when I do this, I do not communicate less to him than I know myself. In the course of this teaching, I shall show him the same colors, the same length, the same shapes. I shall make him find them and produce them, and so on. I shall, for instance, get him to continue on ornamental pattern uniformly when told to do so, and also to continue progressions. And so, for example, when given XXX, to go on YYY. I do it, he does it after me, and I influence him by expressions of agreement, rejection, expectation, encouragement. I let him go his way or hold him back, and so on. I think this is really something which puts Wittgenstein in a line where he can become relevant on very fundamental levels. Now, one may challenge him on this view that it is possible to teach and to communicate such a basic concept like regularity. But at least, I think it's very clear from this passage and also from other passages that he thinks that even such basic concepts like regularity can be taught, and they don't need to be taught by reference to other concepts. There does not yet need to be another concept in place. There does not yet need to be a language in place. There does not yet need to be a rationality in place, in order to bring that concept about and in order to teach or to learn that concept. And after all, what he is very busy with all the time is to study how do children learn the language. And he would say children learn, of course, our concepts, not by being born with a certain innate mental structure like Chomsky would claim, and then that structure gets just realized into certain natural specific languages and contexts. No, there is what is, another issue is of course that I think Wittgenstein may want to say that something is innate and we are born with certain dispositions and we are born with certain properties of nature, but concepts like regularity and so on, they can be taught purely by training and example and practice. So Wittgenstein's concept of practice and of the example, the role of the example, I think are these concepts are extremely important, not only for understanding how, according to him, children acquire language and thinking, but also how communication between different cultures, where no shared concepts and rationality are in place, how such different cultures can establish communication between them. In the same way as children do not need to already have a rationality in place, concepts in place, when they start acquiring those concepts and getting enculturated into a certain language and culture, in the same way between the different cultures, if there are not yet these shared ways of acting and with that shared concepts in place, such shared concepts can be acquired on the basis of practice, what Wittgenstein calls practice. I've now left my manuscript a little bit to speed up, but there's this one important remark in BI section 32, which is on your handout there too, where he concludes his discussion of Augustine's description of language, of how he, Augustine, learned language. And he says there that Augustine describes the learning of language as though the child had already the concepts and he just needs to find the words to express the concepts and to start communicating with others. The concepts are in place, I just need to find a way to externalize and make my mental life relevant to others. So he says that's a wrong picture. The child has not the concepts, it learns the concepts through engaging in practice together with the adults. And that is in section 32, which is on the handout. So one important point in that discussion, I would say, is that where we do not have shared ways of acting, gemeinsame menschliche Handlungsweise, where that is not in place, and let's remember Wittgenstein would say there is a lot of shared human ways of acting, like he would say each human society knows giving and following orders. This may be a wrong claim, but I think he does claim that. He says giving and following orders is known from all human societies. That's a shared human way of acting. And reading the philosophical investigations, you will see how often he returns to ordering, giving orders and following orders. That's one of his touchstones in everything, in rule following, in what is a proposition and so on. He always comes back to giving and following orders. So there are such shared ways of acting, but where they are not yet there and where we do not yet have the sufficient basis there in those shared ways of acting in order to actually establish intercultural communication, there we have the other thing, which is rooted in what I would like to call non-propositional basis, pre-propositional basis, pre-rational, that there is a pre-rational, not yet propositional, not yet rational, not yet linguistic basis in mankind, which permits the child to acquire a language through practical engagement and acquire the concepts, and which permits members of foreign cultures, of different cultures, to start engaging with each other. So in areas where no shared ways of acting exist, these can still be developed from a non-propositional, pre-conceptual, pre-linguistic basis. Why is this important? Well, it is important because a lot of discussions trying to cope with cultural relativism, trying to find the solution in a shared rationality, that somehow we have to establish these shared concepts, or we have to find the shared concepts, and we have to presuppose a sort of universal rationality in order to be able to explain or to account for intercultural communication. And according to Wittgenstein, that's not necessarily necessary, because it's as it is not necessary with children learning their mother tongue, it doesn't need to be so either with grown-ups when they are from different cultures. And there, I think there are especially two Wittgenstein scholars important. One of them is my Bergen colleague Kjell S. Johannessen, who is now emeritus. He has done a lot of work on Wittgenstein's concept of practice and on Wittgenstein's notion of the example, like parents, when they teach their children the use of examples they make there. Practice and examples as intimately linking up with that pre-rational, non-propositional element. And then there's Daniel Moyal-Sharrock, the president of the British Wittgenstein Society, who has done a lot of work on uncertainty, and especially finds there Wittgenstein defending views which stress the primitive and the pre-rational, not only of human activity, but also of language. So Wittgenstein makes quite a few statements to the extent that that language builds on the pre-rational and non-propositional. And Daniel Moyal-Sharrock bases a lot of her interpretation of Wittgenstein on these passages. For example, and you have that one also somewhere on the handout, at some point Wittgenstein says, the origin and the primitive form of the language game is a reaction. Only from this can more complicated forms develop. Language, I want to say, is a refinement. In the beginning was the deed. In German, der Ursprung und die primitive Form des Sprachspiels ist eine Reaktion. So in the beginning there was not rationality. In the beginning there was acting, or even only reacting, something before Handlung, before action. Erst auf dieser können die komplizierteren Formen wachsen. Die Sprache, will ich sagen, ist eine Verfeinerung. Im Anfang war die Tat, quoting Goethes Faust. So, how much time is left, Hodor?
I don't know, maybe 10 minutes.
10 minutes, okay. So, I'm not denying that Wittgenstein would admit that there are difficulties of understanding, even within one and the same culture, even more between different cultures. There will always be elements of intercultural relations which are unshared, as there will be within one and the same culture. But the point is to stress that there is no need to think that they are also unshareable, and that seems to be the point of cultural relativism, that we have no basis to believe that we can achieve communication. So the point is not to deny that often communication actually does not happen. It's just to deny that it cannot be achieved at some point. And I think with the PI we can defend a view of language, language learning, concept acquisition, regularity, the role of practice and of the example, and last but not least, a view of human nature and human action, which provides the means for recognizing that radical cultural relativism, which would deny that we can achieve communication where it is not yet in place, that such a position is unreasonable and partly rests on wrong premises. because learning can take place on pre-rational, pre-conceptual and pre-linguistic levels where no shared rational and conceptual bridges are yet in place. And where then the non-propositional pre-linguistic and pre-rational basis, which is involved in learning one's own mother tongue, for example, can step in and provide for that shared rationality, which builds on that. And maybe I should just read one of those remarks in order to make it a bit clearer what the primitive here means. And I may have forgotten to include that remark there. Anyway, some of you may know that remark. It is a remark where Wittgenstein speaks about primitive reactions. So these are reactions which are not yet reactions in the domain of the rational, of the linguistic. They are really prior to it. I read it first in German. Es hilft hier, wenn man bedenkt, dass es eine primitive Reaktion, ein primitives Verhalten ist, die schmerzende Stelle des anderen zu pflegen, zu behandeln und nicht nur die eigene, also auf des anderen Schmerzbenehmen zu achten, wie auch auf das eigene Schmerzbenehmen nicht zu achten. So, in English translation, this is published in the Remarks on Philosophy of Psychology, and I just quote from there. Here it is a help to remember that it is a primitive reaction to take care of, to treat the place that hurts when someone else is in pain, and not merely when one is so oneself. Hence, it is a primitive reaction to attend to the pain behavior of another, as also not to attend to one's own pain behavior. So he claims here there is something like a common human natural primitive reaction involved when I react to Todor crying out in pain. This is something which we share as humans, which is yet not yet on the basis of shared human actions, but this is on a pre-action, on a pre-linguistic, pre-primitive level. Then he asks, was aber will hier das Wort primitiv sagen? Doch wohl, dass die Verhaltensweise vorsprachlich ist, dass ein Sprachspiel auf ihr beruht, dass sie das Prototyp einer Denkweise ist und nicht das Ergebnis des Denkens. So in this passage it becomes very clear that he thinks this is on a pre-linguistic, pre-rational level, but still it's on a common human level. What, however, is the word primitive meant to say here? And with primitive, as it becomes clear, he does not mean something primitive as sometimes one uses the term primitive tribes. So it means primitive in the sense of prior, logically prior even, and temporally prior, of course. So what, however, is the word primitive meant to say here? Presumably that the mode of behavior is pre-linguistic, that a language game is based on it, and that means that when he speaks of language games, he usually means something which is above the level of the pre-linguistic. It is on the level of the linguistic and above the level of the pre-rational and the behavior. It's on the level of the action. But language games are based on the pre-linguistic and the pre-rational. That it is the prototype of a mode of thought and not the result of thought. I think I conclude with that quote. And my overall point was that Wittgenstein, both in what he says about shared human ways of acting, does on the stuff on the level of the linguistic and the rational, and what he says about the pre-linguistic and the pre-rational, that both discussions help us to understand how communication works, also how intercultural communication works, and they both can help us to see that cultural relativism was not a reasonable option for Wittgenstein. I have now not discussed all that stuff about language games being autonomous and different forms of life and all that stuff. We can take that up in the discussion. I think that's not a serious challenge to that reading of Wittgenstein as someone who does not defend cultural relativism. Thank you.